So here's something to think about the next time you reach for the Ambien. Those 7 to 9 hours of uninterrupted sleep that we all long for may be a relatively recent phenomenon. It turns out that before the industrial age, most Europeans had 2 periods of sleep each night, with an hour or two awake in between. They thought that was normal. So what happened? Matthew Wolf Meyer writes about the development of modern sleep in a book called The Slumbering Masses. He's an anthropologist at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and that's where Steve Paulson reached him.
Matthew, you say sleep for Americans changed significantly in the decade, starting around 1996. What happened then?
The big thing that happens is direct-to-consumer marketing with pharmaceuticals. And so first, we see that with pharmaceuticals associated with depression, and then very quickly, because that's quite successful, other pharmaceuticals get swept up in the same project. And so one of the things that happens around the same time is a new way to affect sleep through pharmaceuticals.
So this was especially for people who had insomnia. Suddenly they had a pill they could take to help them out.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it was a different kind of chemical compound than what had been used previously. So in the 1980s, people were still using drugs that had been used for 50 years. And they were largely seen as being addictive and kind of dangerous in some respects because of the addictive quality. So what happened in the 90s was, I don't want to get too technical about it, but basically there is a new chemical compound that was able to be distilled, and it led to a set of drugs that are referred to as the Z drugs, and the Z is just because of sleep. And those are drugs like Ambien and Lunesta and Sonata. So the big difference, you might guess already, is that they weren't addictive. So you could take them for a week, you could stop taking them. There were no adverse effects to not taking the drug anymore.
Now, you are actually a professor of anthropology. So what happens when you look at sleep through the lens of anthropology?
A couple things. First of all, our kind of assumption about what's referred to as the 11 to 7 model of sleep, that you go to bed around 11 o'clock, you wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning, is a fairly local one. And it's kind of a no-brainer, but we need to be reminded about it, that if you look in many parts of the world, that that's not the normative model. So siesta cultures in Southern Europe and Latin America and China, Taiwan, all sorts of other places where it's not one continuous jag of sleep at night. And it's definitely not from 11 until 7 o'clock in the morning. And so you start to realize that napping is a pretty normative way for a lot of people to sleep around the world. And the other thing, because I'm not just an anthropologist, but also a historian, is looking at how sleep has changed over time. So the way that we sleep these days in the United States is a relatively recent invention, that it's about 150 years old, and that previous to that, people were sleeping quite differently.
You spent a lot of time doing research at the Midwest Sleep Disorders Clinic and other sleep clinics. What were some of the surprising things you found during your research?
The thing that was the biggest surprise for me, and probably for most of the social scientists that I talk to, is that a lot of the doctors aren't strictly interested in medicalizing patients. So we're kind of a naive assumption is that doctors, however benevolent they are, also just want to give you a drug and fix the problem that way. And what I really learned from the doctors that I worked with was that if they could figure out a social fix, that was their preference. So for instance, there's something called delayed sleep phase. It makes people owls. People want to wake up later. So one of the problems that people with delayed sleep phase have is that they have a hard time getting to work or school at a set time. And so teenagers who have delayed sleep phase often end up in real trouble with school because they need to be there at 7:30, but they can't wake up until 9:30 or 10 o'clock. And so the doctors that I know did a lot of advocacy work on the part of students who had conditions like that, where they would talk to school administrators and say, we could put this kid on a drug, but what we would rather do is have him come into school late
This is fascinating. I mean, it's sort of the suggestion is maybe high schools should start at 11 in the morning and, you know, go till 7 in the evening or something like that.
Right. I mean, that's one of the possibilities, that if we had more flexible institutions, that we wouldn't necessarily need to medicalize sleep as much as we do. So if students could go in later and stay later, that might fix a lot of the problems that adolescents have with sleep. But there's problems. One of them is that school is really seen as kind of childcare, although we don't necessarily think about it this way. While you go to work, your kids are at school. And if they're going to school at a different time than you're working, then who's watching those kids between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock in the morning?
Right. Right? You have to change the work schedule to accommodate the sleep of teenagers.
Right.
So getting back to sleep clinics, do they work? I mean, are they effective in helping people who have trouble sleeping?
Yes. If there's some equivocation in my voice, it kind of depends on the problem. There's some conditions that are fairly straightforward in their treatment. Things like sleep apnea can be treated pretty successfully with things like CPAP and BiPAP machines, as long as patients can kind of tolerate the technology and are persistent with the treatment. A lot of insomnia comes in two different forms. There's the primary insomnia where people have a hard time going to sleep at night, and you can take a drug. And generally speaking, those drugs lose their physiological effectiveness, but not necessarily their psychological effectiveness fairly quickly. So a lot of times people keep taking a drug, even though it doesn't actually have a physiological effect on them, because they feel like they need to take the drug in order to get to sleep. And so in a sense, it's still effective, but maybe not. But the maybe more troubling kind of insomnia is the insomnia where you wake up in the middle of the night and you have a hard time going back to sleep.
Right. And I've had plenty of that myself, but I tend to go through phases. And what happens, you know, this has happened a few nights in a row, is you wake up and you think, uh-oh, I'm not going to be able to get back to sleep. It becomes a psychological thing.
Right. So the radical thing that I'm going to tell you is to believe in human evolution, and that if you do, then waking up in the middle of the night is not a form of insomnia. It's actually the kind of sleep that we've evolved to prefer. So if you look at historical records before the 1840s, people are sleeping that way, and that's the norm. And one of the strange things that we see now is that when people are sleeping like that and they go seek out medical treatment and get a drug, they end up developing secondary sleep disorders. So they're taking a drug that keeps them asleep, but their body still wants to wake up in the middle of the night. And so they start sleepwalking in the middle of the night because technically their brain is still asleep, but part of their brain wants to be awake. And so the best thing to do generally is to not take a drug when you're waking up in the middle of the night, but also to realize that it's not necessarily a physiological problem. It might be a social problem in that it's difficult to work the next day, but then maybe a nap is better than taking a drug.
This is a fascinating take on insomnia. I mean, you're really suggesting that there's no intrinsic problem with insomnia, except that if you've got to get to work or school the next morning. But I mean, this is kind of just all part of the way the body naturally wants to respond. I mean, to wake up at odd times and then you're going to go back to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the reason why many of the sleep disorders that are associated with late sleeping or early rising are treated as problems, is because of the social problems they produce. Not because there's something fundamentally wrong with your body. It's something fundamentally wrong with the expectations that people have of us to be alert and productive at specific times of the day. So if we get rid of that kind of artifice about when we should be active and productive, and instead abide by when we need to sleep and when we want to sleep, a lot of that medicalization of sleep suddenly disappears.
Matthew Wolfmeyer is the author of The Slumbering Masses: Sleep, Medicine, and Modern American Life. He spoke with Steve Paulson.